The book of Job. So I had a question asked last week and the same question asked again today. And so it's not, you know, it's not an unreasonable question. But the question is this. If Job was living for God and serving God, why did God bring that up so that Satan would destroy his life? And it's a legitimate question. But the difference is this. We have the narrative where God says to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" Right? Do we know if God's ever said that about us? We don't know that, do we? We don't know if God only did that with Job in this one instance, or if he's looked at our lives. Because how many of you had life just everything was going great? And then all of a sudden, the bottom dropped out, right? How many of you have experienced that? So it's not unusual. What we see happen with Job is not unusual. And so we don't question that. Life can be going fine, and then all of a sudden, calamity. What we question is, why is that sentence in there where God says to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" The question is this, why would God do that to Job? Sacrifice on the mountaintop? Well, he brought him right to the edge, didn't he? With Abraham, took Isaac up there and bound him, put him on the altar. Well, but Abraham didn't kill Isaac. That was the difference. Job's children died. And that's part of the question. Why would that kind of calamity come? As a test, or to show Satan that Job wouldn't falter, or to show Job that he had the strength and patience that he may have thought he had. He may not have even considered it. And I really don't have a satisfactory answer for that, except to say it happens to us. Was it God, in that terminology, was God toying with Job's life? Understand something. When we look at our lives and we put it on a calendar, right? We say 85 years. How many of you think 85 years is a long time? How many of you think it's not as long as you thought it was going to be? So we're getting closer to that mark, right? Now, how old is God? Right? Is 85 years a drop in the bucket to God? A day with the Lord is as what? And 1,000 years is one day. So what we don't have in perspective, and we look at, by the way, the book of Job is a big book, isn't it? 40 chapters. So we look at all these chapters and we say, wow, that's a long book of the Bible. But when we back up and look at our lives, you know, these chapters don't cover the whole life of Job. There was a lot that happened before we got to Job chapter 1. And there's a lot that happens at the end of, after the book of Job is completed. This is a season of Job's life. We've had hard times in our lives. And something I said to, I remember there was a couple in our church going through some trouble. And the wife was just, you know, really struggling. And she said to me, you know, she expressed to me her troubles. And I said, remember, this is just right now. It's not forever. It's just for now. And we get the mindset, because we're in it right now, that this is how it's going to always be. But we know it's not always going to be this way. This season, we can survive a season, right? Let me remind you, we can survive a season. Job survived a season. And when it was all over, we look at Job coming out of this, and what was his situation at the end of the book? Way better off than when he started. So did he go through the trial? Yes. Did God reward him sweetly for going through that journey and maintaining his integrity? Yes. It doesn't take away the question. The question is still there. Why would God bring it up? Why would God direct the attention? But you know, maybe even Not only was it for us to learn, not only was it for Satan to learn, not only was it for Job to learn, but what did it teach the people around him? Now, we've read, and we'll cover this morning, about his three friends, right? It doesn't look like at the end of the story they learned much. But our lives teach those around us. How did it change Job's wife? What do we know about Job's wife in the beginning? First thing you know about his wife, what'd she say? Curse God and die. Wow, thanks for that. What do we know about Job's wife at the end? We know they had more children, didn't they? So evidently they made up. Evidently it worked out. So again, this is a season, but the people around Job are seeing this. They're living this. The servants in his house, they're seeing this. So it was a lesson for all of them. Guys, we go through trials in our lives for the benefit of others. Everything in our life should be used for the benefit of others. And if you ever think that you're the only one who sees what's happening in your life, you're wrong. People are watching. And God is watching. So anyway, that question came up, so I thought I'd address it again. Is there a satisfactory answer? That's the best I could do. Job 2, verse 11. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came everyone from his own place. Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, the Shuhite, Zophar, the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. So these three friends called each other. Okay, however they did. They reached out. They said, you know what we need to do? We need to go encourage our friend. And so the three of them got together to go encourage their friend. When's the last time, now don't raise your hand, but when's the last time you did that? When's the last time you thought about somebody and you said, we need to go encourage them? Now, I know when it comes to church discipline, Jesus says if you have an offense with a brother, you go to that brother and you tell him I'm offended and hopefully you can work it out. And if not, what do? You go and you get somebody else from the church and the two of you go to that brother or sister and you say, hey, this is what you're doing wrong and this is what offends us. And then if they still will not hear it, then you bring it before the church, right? Is that what the Bible says? Or, you know, so we look at a disciplinary, but how many times do we call somebody and say, hey, there's some people that need to be encouraged, and I think they'd be more encouraged if more of us went. If not just I go, you know, it's one thing for me to go by myself, you to go by yourself, but let's bring a group. I can tell you, I've been in those situations where we go to visit somebody and in the nursing home or something, and I go, you know, most of the time by myself. But while I was there, other church members showed up, and other church members showed up, and other church members. I mean, one time we were visiting, there were like eight people there, and none of us scheduled to be there together. Isn't that great? I think that's wonderful. But how encouraging was that for the person that was there, that was the patient? And so that's the kind of stuff. Now, do we get together? Yeah, we plan to go together sometimes. We go in pairs or we go in teams. But this was a good thing. Job's three friends, because we know the rest of the story, we have a very unpleasant opinion of them. But let's begin that they had the right heart. They wanted to help their friend. And that should give them some credit. They went all three together. They came, verse 11, the last phrase there, he says, they came together to come, to mourn with him, and to comfort him. So they went for the right reasons. They had the right idea in mind. Verse 12, they lifted up their eyes afar off. They knew him not. They lifted up their voice, and they wept, and they rent their everyone his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and seven nights. Is this next part underlined in your Bible? And none spake a word. That's a friend, isn't it? That's a friend. We're experiencing this with some people in our lives now that are uncomfortable with silence. They can't stand for silence. And I've often, you know, referred to this, that you ought to be able to get in the car and go for a ride and say nothing. Or go fishing and just fish. Or go, you know, work on a project and just work. I mean, it's, look, there's nothing wrong with having good fellowship while you're doing those things. But if you don't have anything to talk about, don't make up stuff. Don't search for stuff. Just enjoy the peace and quiet and the presence of your brother or sister. But some people are very uncomfortable with the silence. How many of you ever thought you needed to say something and then after you said it, you wished you hadn't? So one of the best phrases here in the book of Job is that phrase, none spake a word. There are times when we don't know what to say, and it's best not to say anything at all. They sat down. I love that. Verse 13. This is a picture of ministers. These three friends said, let's get together, go encourage our brother. Let's comfort him is the word that's used here. And let's sit down with him. And they wept. They rent their mantles. They sat down with him. They sat down with him just to be there. I know it's awkward. I know it's awkward. My dad used to call me sometimes. Why? Because I'm a great son, right? But because he just wanted to talk to me. He just wanted to feel that connection. Before he had lived with us, of course. But he would call me just to talk with nothing to talk about. And sometimes we just sit on the phone. Why? Because he just needed that connection. And, you know, sometimes that can be annoying, right? But you talk to a 14-year-old who's got a girlfriend or boyfriend, and what will they do? They'll call just to be on the phone. Nothing to say, just to sense that they have captured that person's attention. Yeah. Just your presence. And that's what they brought. By the way, wouldn't it have been great if it ended there? If that was the extent of their service. But so being present, just being there, makes a difference. And that's what they did. The none spake a word. They saw that his grief was great, was very great, so they recognized that. Now, how was Job doing through all this? Well, he finally breaks his silence in chapter 3 and verse 3. And we're not going to look. Y'all do understand we're supposed to cover chapter 2 through 31, right? We're not going verse by verse this morning. I hope you did that at home. But if I skip over something you want to talk about, please interject. But chapter 3, verse 3, Job says, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said there is a man-child conceived. So Job hates his life. Now, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but I will confess to you this morning, I get it. Now, I haven't lost 10 children. I haven't lost my entire enterprise, my empire, buildings and camels and sheep and all that. I haven't lost as much in my life as Job lost in his, though at times in my life, if you lose it all, you lose it all. So I get it. The desire to just die, the hopelessness, I get it. There's a lesson in here for us. And we see that Job went through this. And one of the things about the Christian walk is that sometimes in our lives, we feel like we're the only one going through what we're going through, and that we're the only one that's ever been through this. Now, if we'll be reasonable, we understand that's just not the case. And the wisdom of God is that He has put us in a church where there are people in this church who have done and gone through what we are doing and have gone through. And there are people, brothers and sisters in this church, that you can talk to who know what you're going through. Now you say, but Pastor, how do you know that? You don't know what I'm going through. I know, but if you'll tell me, I'll tell you who you can talk to. And I know that's the case because I've done that so many times. Because God is wise that way. In fact, I believe, again, that God will bring people through this church just for seasons, because this is where the people are that they need for that season of life. Now, would it be great if we could all have joined the church in 1972 and still be members of it? Sure. But the truth is, people have come and gone through Capitol Heights Baptist Church. And you're here now for this season of your life, whether it's because of what you have to contribute or because of what you need. By the way, most of the time when we join the church, we don't realize we're going to need what we end up needing. But God is wise. You're not the only one going through it. Somebody's been through it. There's probably somebody in this congregation that's been through it or is going through it. And so we are to serve and minister and help and encourage each other. That's how God works. It's how the church is supposed to work. Verse 21, Job says, "Which long for death, but it cometh not. Dig for it more than for hid treasure." So Job wants to die. Who else in the Bible have you ever read about that spoke about dying in this kind of manner? If you're wearing a mask, you're going to have to do more than mouth it. Lot, he went through some struggles. Who? David went through some struggles. You look at the Psalms. Jesus. "My soul is sorrowful unto death." Jesus himself, knowing what he was about to go through on the cross with the crucifixion, with the betrayal of one of the very inner, one of the guys the whole church trusted. Judas Iscariot was the one who was going to sell him for the price of a slave. And he knew that was going to happen. And he knew that his mom would be at the foot of that cross as he was up there, bloody, bruised, beaten, lacerated, nearly dead, naked and shamefully displayed. And his mom would see that. And he went to that garden that night. And the Bible says he sweat, as it were, drops of blood. And he said, "Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." He was sorrowful unto death. He said, what we gain from that is, he said, "I would rather die than live through the next couple of days and what I'm about to face." But then there was a second part of his prayer, wasn't it? "Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done." So Job went through it. Jesus went through it. The point is, they were at that point of hopelessness where there was no desire to live. There was no desire to survive. And yet, they both did. Look at verse 25. "The thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me." So what do we know? We know that Job had considered. Look, go back to chapter 1. What was he doing? He said, "I'm going to make sacrifices and pray for my children because I don't know if there is something ungodly in their heart, if they've done something wrong, and I don't want God to be mad at them, so I'm making sacrifices, making offerings," right? What were they doing? They were eating and drinking. He was making sacrifices. He was afraid something bad was going to happen. And what happened? Something bad happened. Now, how many of your worries actually come to pass? Your fears actually are fulfilled. How many? A huge portion of them? Most of the time not. So we waste a lot of energy and a lot of joy by worrying about things that never happened. Now Job says, that thing which I feared the most. Well, I can't imagine anything worse than losing one of our children. Right? 10-0. So that loss of a child is a tremendous loss. And that was the greatest fear that Job had, as most parents would agree. That was his greatest fear. And he says, that which I feared the most has come upon me. Go ahead. Sensitive. And you know, if he didn't rise from the ashes, I would be a lot more concerned about it. But because he did recover, I'm not as insulted by it, I guess is the right word. Because he recovered. Now, if it was just his demise, I would go, oh, that didn't seem right. But he recovered. And he rose again out of the ashes. Oh, yeah. It all happened at once. While he was yet speaking, came another. While he was yet speaking, came another. You're right. Calamity. Did I see a hand over here? I need a microphone out there today. Everybody is watching. Go ahead. I guess the trouble that I have is with the. Yeah, that's the word I'm having trouble with. And that's the question. You're the third person now to bring that question. Why did God bring it up? Right? Satan was, what you been doing? No, just going to and fro upon the earth. Well, have you considered Job? And then the second time, have you considered Job? And don't forget, there was a second time. So not only did he lose, you know, his stock and his building and his children, but then the second wave came in, and what happened? Because he went through that. You say he didn't have time to mourn. Well, he kind of made it through that. And then Satan attacked him with his own body, you know, his health. To the point where he describes it here. He says, my skin's crawling with worms. You can imagine how bad that would be. Just disgusting, right? His own self. So not only did he, you know, not really have time to recover, but it just kept getting deeper, 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 deeper of a wound. And why? Well, all these years later, you know, whether it's 6,000 years or however long it's been, we're still saying the patience of Job, aren't we? why did what change? Why did it get better? That was God's blessing. So God brought him through that season, but he did it, but there was something beyond that. And usually that's the case when we have hard seasons in our lives. If we could just hang on. When is it darkest? Just before the dawn, right? And you know that's true if you've ever watched it. So, and I can remember driving I want to say driving here, but I can remember driving on the interstate, pouring rain, where I couldn't see anything around me, and thinking to myself, I need to just pull over and wait for it to pass. But the understanding came to me that if you sit in this rain, that cloud may be this big, and it may be going that direction, and you may be in for the long run. And if you just keep driving, what will happen? Eventually, you'll drive out of it. Now, I'm not saying that's always the best case for you. It depends on a lot of circumstances. But as soon as I had that understanding of that idea, I kept driving, and it was just seconds, and I was out of it. I almost quit when I would have had to endure it much longer. I refer back to T-ball because it's a memory that stuck with me. I can remember going through those innings in T-ball as a coach thinking, we got to be at the end of this inning. How many of you ever coached T-ball? Right? So you understand. I told you God put people in here that could understand this, right? But I'd always think, oh, it's got to be the end. And right when I would give up, I would look at the other coach and say, when are we going to be finished? And it would always, he's the last batter. Always, he's the last one. And we're always ready to, or many times I am ready to give up just before the breakthrough, just before it gets better. And the lesson here with Job is he went through it, and it wasn't just one thing, but it was compiled. Calamity. The worst, and he says it this way, that which I feared the most has come upon me. So it got worse and it got worse and it got worse. And how many of us have ever asked that question or said that, made that statement, it can't get any worse? Don't ever do that. Could it get any worse? Oh, no. And that's what happened with Job. It just kept getting deeper and deeper and worse and worse and worse. And yet, the point is that as bad as it got, I don't have a good answer for the question, except to say that it taught him, it taught those around him, it's teaching us today, and the lesson is for us to maintain our integrity, maintain our faith, maintain our patience, no matter what we're going through, and also not to heed all advice that's offered. Understand something. These three friends, again, great men, great friends. They loved him. They went out of their way. They set aside their lives. They came and sat on the ground with him in sackcloth and ashes and just said nothing. They were just present. Those friends are hard to find. For 7 days and 7 nights, and they were just there. And to me, that says so much. But then they started giving advice. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. In chapter 2 of verse number 10, he sinned, neither did Job sin with his lips. Because let's face it, we're pretty quick to say things when we shouldn't. And a lot of, especially if we use profanity. You know, how many of you have hit your thumb with a hammer? And said nothing. But when we're so quick to say something, a lot of, especially if we have something bad happen, what comes out is not good. And so it's a good point, Brother Harry. He sinned not with his lips. Getting into his friends and chapter 4. Again, we won't read everything, but look at verse 4, because this is important. Eliphaz says, "Thy words have upholden him that was falling. Thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled." So what is Eliphaz saying? Eliphaz is saying, "Job, you always told us not to give up. You always tell us not to quit." So, what am I missing? All right. You got the other one on? Eliphaz says, "Job, you always encourage us and you always tell us to hang in there. And now you're going through it. Where's that advice you always give us? Why aren't you living by it? Why?" We have to be mindful that the advice that we give is going to be remembered by those who watch our lives. But Job had been a minister and a counselor to many. He had encouraged people all of his life. And now Eliphaz takes that and throws it in his face. "Well, Job, you're not supposed to be sad. Job, you're not supposed to cry. Job, you're not supposed to suffer." And so the friendship is beginning to be revealed. Verse 8, "Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same." So Eliphaz's accusation toward Job is, "You deserve this, and there's something we don't know about, but God would not let you go through this if you didn't earn it." Now we know, because we know of the counsel in heaven, we know that's not the case. We know that God says Job is a man of integrity, a righteous man, one who escheweth evil, walks uprightly and escheweth evil. So we know that Job is a man of faith and a man of character and a man of integrity. And now his friend comes along and says, "This wouldn't have happened if you'd have been doing right." I've heard preachers preach this kind of stuff. And one of the greatest examples I have of that is listening to a preacher that would preach this type of sermon, that bad things don't happen to good people. Bad things don't happen to good people. And the next day his wife got bit by a dog. I said, "Well, what is it you haven't told us? What is this secret sin you're carrying?" Let me tell you something. Bad things happen to good people. Christian people. Bad things happen to good Christian people. And so when somebody is suffering, we don't run in and make accusation or question, "Well, why did this happen to them?" What do we do? We could go with the beginning of that chapter when his friends came and sat down with him and cried with him and said nothing while they were still friends. Chapter 6, again, if there's something that we've missed, we can go back. This is Job's answer, verse 8, "Oh, that I might have my request, that God would grant me the thing that I long for, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off." Job's saying, "God, you haven't finished the job yet." They're saying, "You know, you've earned this," and Job's saying, "Finish it. You've wiped everything out except my own life." Remember, his skin is crawling with infection. He hurts all the time. He wants to die. Verse 10, "Then should I yet have comfort? Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One." Verse 24, "Teach me," chapter 6, verse 24, "teach me and I will hold my tongue, and cause me to understand wherein I have erred." So Job is saying, "God, show me what I've done. kill me, squash me in this. There is a lot of his answer that is basically saying, if I was dead, I'd be better off. And I've heard people, they've told me that. And that was where Job was. Chapter 7, verse 5. My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome. Verse 6. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. Don't raise your hand, but maybe you can relate. Here's this righteous man of God, man of faith, man of integrity, saying, I have no hope. Verse 13, chapter 8, this is his other friend. So are the paths of all that forget God, and the hypocrite's hope shall perish. What did he just call Job? A hypocrite. Job wished they'd go back to just being quiet. By the way, he expresses that. Let's get over here to where he kind of tells them that. Zophar in chapter 11, should not the multitude of words be answered? Should a man be full of talk, be justified? Should thy lies make men hold their peace? When thou mockest, shall no man make thee ashamed? Thou hast said, my doctrine is pure, and I am clean in thine eyes. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips against thee, and that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, that they are double to that which is. Know therefore that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. Zophar says to Job, God has not even begun to get to you yet. He's not even begun to destroy you the way you deserve to. Because what's his opinion? His opinion is that Job is hiding sin. And not only that, they actually say, they name some things in here. They think Job must have done to get punished by God. So the lesson is not only about patience, it's also about self-righteousness, isn't it? Chapter 12, verse 1. And Job answered and said, no doubt, but ye are the people, and wisdom shall die with you. I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these? Chapter 13, verse 1. Lo, mine eye hath seen all this. Mine ear hath heard and understood it. What ye know, the same do I know. I'm not inferior to you. Verse 4, but ye are forgers of lies. Ye are all physicians of no value. Oh, that you would all together hold your peace, and it should be your wisdom. He said, you know what would be smart? What would be wise? Hush. Stop talking. Verse 13, hold your peace, let me alone that I may speak. Let come on me what will. Verse 15, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Amen. Man of faith. There are a few other phrases in here. Look at chapter 16. Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Oh, boy. Shall vain words have an end? What emboldeneth thee that thou... In other words, he says, who do you think you are to talk to me this way? Right? You ever had somebody talk to you that way? Who do you think you are? And we try to, you know, rise above and not... come back at them, but I'll tell you something. Some people's arrogance is immeasurable. And here's, I'll tell you the truth. You know the only thing you can do? Let it go. Because the more you engage, the deeper you get. And if you ever wrestle with a pig in the mud, you're going to get muddy and he's going to have a good time. Verse 5, I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief. He says, look, if you were going through this, I would help you. I would encourage you. I would comfort you. He said, y'all are not helpful at all. I'm trying to finish it up with the bell already ringing, but is there anything else you wanted to bring out? In chapter 31 and verse 6, Job says this, let me be weighed in an even balance that God may know mine integrity. Here's the thing. Job says, I don't want to hide anything. There's no value hiding from our sin, from our faults. He said, I just want to know what's really going on. I just want the truth. How many of you be satisfied just knowing the truth? I just want to, he says, look, I'm not trying to look any particular way. I'm not trying to paint this any particular way. I just want to know the truth. Just weigh me in the balance. Tell me where I'm wrong. How many of you, if you realize you were wrong about something, would change? Some of you wouldn't. But that's what Job is saying. He said, look, if I'm wrong, tell me, I'll change. That needs to be our mindset. Look, what Job went through, again, the measure of it by ratio, by proportion, maybe you've been through the same. It looks huge when we talk about Job, and that's kind of the point of a parable. But the truth is, he maintained his integrity. He didn't say the wrong thing. He didn't do the wrong thing. His wife was not comforting. His three friends, once they started trying to encourage him, that didn't work. Where could he go? Who did he have? He said, God, just kill me. Just get it over with. He was walking alone. But he maintained his faith. And in the end, I know we're not there yet, but in the end, he survived it. How many of you have survived every day so far? Sometimes you didn't think you would, but you have. Just take a break.